Accession number 22076, Reel 5.
Frank Rosier, Reel 5. Okay, so
on the 14th of June, we moved off in support of 50 de Lagan down to this place called Longyearbyen. Now, Longyearbyen is 4 km from Tillis Hessels. In fact, it's so close, it's unbelievable. When you think Tillis Hessels changed hands over 20 times, Longyearbyen, we captured it on the 14th, when I say we, the British Army captured it on the 14th of June, and we never let it go. And it was the same lot we were against, 12 pounds a lear. And what happened there was the 9th Dalmarnock Infantry, who had been used to fighting into Italy, the desert, as 50 div came up through the desert and fought Rommel in the desert and up through Italy, then came to this place in the Bocage where we had been trained to fight in. They hadn't, not much training, and they attacked with Typhoons full of artillery support, and if I tell you they lost 260 men in that attack, you can see why we were very reluctant to ever let that go again. They, I think, pretty proud of them. And Durham Light Infantry, I have a great association with the 9th DLIA, because my best friend was a member of that, and I can chat to you why we were best friends, if you like, later on. They went in and they took this place against really fierce fighting. We come along in that evening, and Major General Martin, who's the president of the Normandy Veterans Association now, great pal of mine, I like General Martin, and he was a major in the Cheshires, which was the machine gun, and he was on patrol on his own. Mad lot, these officers. And he came across B Company and saw that some Durham Light Infantry were in trouble, so B Company got them out of trouble, and then he saw about 3 or 4 German armoured cars and about 40 Germans, which we took prisoner.
Tell me what you did there.
A D Company knew nothing about going on about this. We were moving up into the other side of the village, taking over from the Durham Light Infantry, where then the fighting had died right down. I often pulled Tony's leg. They lost 260 men. We lost one. And as I say, we knew how to do it. You didn't. But that's not true. I mean, they had a tremendous fight there. We then moved into the village and sort of concentrated where we were supposed to do. The company were just on the edge of the village, looking towards Tillis Hessels. We were then told, Sergeant Frayn and about 6 of us, and myself with the radio, moved through undercover to where this cross is. And I'm always surprised how far this cross is still outside of, quite a way outside the village, towards Tillis Hessels. We got there, very good cover. We could see him. He possibly knew where we were, but he couldn't touch us because of the lie of the land. And it was in a little recess, this cross, this remembrance
and
cross.
Who was this you're talking about?
The section, really, of from 17 Platoon. We moved the cross as we moved forward.
Yeah, sorry. And you're saying he couldn't see you. Who's he?
Germans, the
right,
Germans.
The Germans.
Well, when I talk about
Germans
he,
right,
well, we always talk about he or him.
Right.
You see. And the Germans were up there, and undoubtedly knew where we were. And across the road, it's no longer a sweet shop. It's just a plain brick wall. It was a sweet shop. Why a sweet shop was so far out of town, I've never figured out. The French are a peculiar race anyway. And there was still a young boy, still not accepting that it was war. Was different to a scheme. Said to the bloke beside me, hey, before that shop burns down, I'm going over there because sweets are on rationer. See what sweets they've got. We ran across the road into this sweet shop, which was burning pretty fiercely. Stuffed ourselves with chocolate. I mean, chocolate was a, you know, the diamonds. Run back to the where our position was. Jerry, we could see his tank guns over the top of the hill as you looked up the hill where his tanks were. And one of them must have seen him go in there. And we'd hardly got back to our position. He completely destroyed the shop with a cut of HEs. Bang, bang, the shop blew up. That's probably why it ain't there today. Sergeant Frayne turned to me. He said, Rosier, one day you'll bloody well grow up. You get us all bloody killed. And I think then, that moment, I did actually think, bloody hell, yeah, he's right. Now, forget the language, but that's what sort of goes through. Bloody hell, he's right. Our job for this OP, as it was called, observation post, was called to, if there was a counterattack, not to fight, just immediately pull over the radio, be in counterattack, and pull back to our lines. Don't fight. That was the order. Well, we'd be overwhelmed. I mean, six men would be overwhelmed. Lucky he didn't counterattack, not that day anyway. The Glossers were then taken over from by the 8th ELI, and we moved out of Langeais. That was dead tanks, when I say dead tanks, knocked out tanks, all over the show. Yeah. All over the show, German tanks. Pretty proud of the DLI to this day, because they knocked out six Panther tanks with a Piat. I mean, that the Sherwood Foresters tried to claim that, but they didn't. The DLI knocked them out with a Piat. And, you know, I think that's a pretty wonderful thing to have done for infantrymen to do that. So we moved out of there, and really then was really a quiet period. It seems at that time that he'd drawn a line and said, if you want to go any further, you're going to fight for it. So we got that beachhead, and if you want to go any further, and by golly, did he make us fight. Do you want to go on from there?
Yes, absolutely.
So we moved about from battalion to division to pretty different, you know, support of this one, back to 50 Div, into 7th Armoured, 11th Armoured, 43rd Div, ended up in the 59th Div. And we eventually got to a place called, make sure I get this right for you, because my French is not as good as. And I'm pretty proud of this again, because the battalion were pretty good. I'll tell you the date, was July the 19th, I think, something like that.
Did you keep a diary when you were there?
No, we weren't allowed to.
Right.
We're not allowed. A lot did, but we weren't allowed to. Yeah, and it was the Parfleur Eclair. In Saint-Germain. The company then was part of the front line again, and I don't know what division we were in by then, but our orders were, there was two very strong company of Germans, and our job was to smash through them, our company. We attacked, we took some casualties too this day, and we moved up and we did that job. We smashed our way through. Very superior forces to us. And I always say that the British, Tommy, has got one thing. Germans may be the best soldiers in the world, but the British are the best fighters, because we fight. And certainly, I mean, we're quite capable of telling our officer to bugger off if he didn't agree what he told him. But, you know, whereas the German would obey an order blindly, so I think. But we did this, and we smashed our way through and held it. Now,
tell me where the Germans were, where you were, how you came forward.
We met them head on first.
Right.
And then
Were they?
In the woods all around us.
Right.
In the woods all around us. And it was like moving through not quite a path in the woods, a rather wide, well, a row, like a wide lawn.
Yes.
And we were moving down the edge, we were either side of that fighting the Germans, and we smashed our way through there, and he was dug in the lawn, for want of a better word, right across it. So we smashed our way through, and literally did smash our way through. I mean, it was brute force and ignorance in the end, I suppose. No tanks, we didn't have any tanks with us.
Right.
So it was infantry against infantry.
Unsupported infantry.
And against unsupported infantry again, but later on. Now, the idea of the brigade and the division was that we opened the door, and then the rest of the brigade and the division would pour through, which happened. I don't remember too much about it, all that much, except that it was pretty terrifying.
So it was daylight, was it?
Daylight.
How dark was the wood? It was reasonably...
A sunny day.
Sunny, yeah.
Sunny day. Vision was quite good. Vision was quite good.
Yeah. So the Germans were literally hiding in the ferns.
Oh, yeah.
Behind
dug in, defensive positions a lot.
So you were having to go towards
And two companies. I mean, one company was, if you can imagine the Germans, we were advancing. One was on our left and one was on our right.
Yeah.
And they were in the middle as well, liaising between them in the middle. So we opened this door.
Yeah.
That was the idea of what we did. We didn't know we were opening the door, but that's our job. And we did it. We reached our objective, our target, and we held it against quite superior odds at some times. We drove them off. And I say, I don't remember much about it because it was so intense. And I think the intenser things were.
Yeah.
People say, how long did it take? I said, I don't know. It seemed hours. It more like it was only about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you're not conscious of time in that thing. Your mind goes blank and you do the job you're there for. And by then, I was a competent soldier, believe you me. Yeah. All the boyhoodness had gone from me. And rolling, jumping, leaping, taking cover as and where I could, running forward. By then, I'd lost the radio set. I mean, so they'd taken it off me. I was company runner by then. A little bit back. But that particular day was part of it. And with a Sten gun, fairly useless long distance, is pretty good close quarter. But was using them made to keep their heads down. I mean, this is one. The difference between fighting infantry as to fighting tanks is you've got to find them. You know, you can see a tank, but you've got to find the infantry. And every leaf that moves or everything that moves, you take cover and try to figure out if it's him or just the wind blowing a leaf. Pretty hair-raising stuff. He knows where you are. You're going to find him. But anyway, having done that, and why I mention it, and why it's so important to me, is Ralph Norbrook got the MC, and Brim Price got the MM for that little attack. In later years, I often said to Brim Price is a Welsh farmer, and he just wants nothing more to do with it after the war. I've talked to him, but he says, Frank, nice to see you again, but let it go. Whereas Norbrook found me rather than I found him. And I said to him many years later, why didn't the good-looking chap running alongside you, your company runner, why didn't he get a medal? Privates don't get medals, he says. Now, you look how true that is. You look down this, a private has got to do something extraordinary to get a medal. But I reckon a lot of our lads deserve medals. And I did get mentioned in dispatches, but I don't count that, and I never wear it. Because I never got it authenticated. I was told I've been mentioned in dispatches, and that's the last I ever heard of it. You know, probably the bloke who did it got killed.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
Yeah, we're doing fine. Yeah.
So, by then, as I say, we become a pretty good fighting unit and a well acclaimed unit, can I say? People were,
so
the Gloucesters.
Have
yeah.
Built a reputation now.
Yeah, and we were, you know. Though it seems, when I go to the Gloucesters Museum in Gloucester, they don't want to recognise it. It's all about Burma, all about Dunkirk. But there's a little bit about D-Day and
yes.
Normandy, you know, which hurts us, hurts a lot of us, right. That they haven't recognised the 2nd
yeah.
Battalion.
So did you lose any casualties
lots
in,
of
that
men.
Action, in that action?
Lots of men.
Right.
It's important to say to you that as that was going on, you behave... us, human beings, to behave in a different way.
Mm.
You either go to jelly, because you know an infantryman, your life's short as an infantryman, though some went right through. Or you do what I become, a ruthless, nasty piece of work. And it took me 2 or 3 years after the war to get back to being normal.
We'll come to that, yes.
Yeah. So what I'm saying to you is you become as bad as the conditions you're fighting in.
Well, you become what you need to become to survive.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You learn, yes, a good way of putting it. You learn to survive, but it's a pretty nasty business.
Yeah, necessary.
You move about and getting used to things, but you want to talk about that later.
Yes,
that sort of the horror of war, the really horror of it.
Mm.
So we were fighting right across the front.
Yeah. So after this horrible incident. I mean, do you know how many casualties there were in this war? Do you know this?
Well, this is,
how
you know,
many
only
there?
By referring to the war dollars again. Harbour Lither, June the 19th. Jenny killed the casualty at the end of the day.
So how many companies were involved?
Just D Company on this one. The whole battalion were coming behind us, but we were the lead battalion.
Right.
That's what
okay.
After July. That's powerful. Gosh, it doesn't tell us.
Yeah. Never mind.
We took a lot. We took a lot of. I mean, there's two. Both Norbrook and Brim Price were both wounded. And of course, I lost my officer. So a new officer was coming out. You know, as if I say, a private soldier has taught an officer who never fought more than he taught me. As time went, NCOs would rely on the experienced troops there.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But the casualties were beginning to get, and we were beginning to thin out from the original boys that trained together on the Isle of Wight, etc. And your family was getting smaller.
Yes.
So we fought right across the face, right across to Mount Pisón.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah. So from this incident you just described so vividly, what did you do then?
Well, continue fighting.
Right,
you
okay.
know, so this went on. Went on and on. We took over from the Green Howards. They took over from us. We took over from the Durham Light Infantry. We take over from all sorts of different units. Suddenly, Scottish boys would be taken over from, moving into the 51st Island Div, you know, and all sorts of things going on.
What was your new officer like? He came up fairly quickly,
didn't he? I can't remember him.
Oh, right.
It's so insignificant. So inconvenient. I couldn't remember him. He became the company commander in the end, but I can't remember him. You know, he was a non-entity to me.
Yeah.
You know, I was a soldier. He was the, you know, he did what I told him in the end.
Yeah.
It's strange. Our roles reversed,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So what's the next individual incident you remember?
Moving across, down through the countryside, fighting all the time, very little sleep, very uncomfortable, very, very wet, very, very dry. You know, depends on what the weather was going on. Very dirty,
yes.
And pretty horrible. Then we came down into August, and the breakthrough happened. When I talk about the breakthrough, was the Yanks did what they should have done a month before, they come sweeping round. If they explain the conditions, we were against 6.5 Panzer divisions. You know, a Panzer division is tanks. The Yanks had less than one. And Monty's plan worked. I'll get that in, because the Yanks often say Monty was slow. He wasn't. We were holding the armour. They should have come round earlier. So the breakthrough happened, and we got down to this place called Thurio Cor. These places stick out in the mind more than most. We approached Thurio Cor with the 53rd Infantry Division then.
Right. What sort of terrain are we talking about here?
We were by then into Swiss Normandy, which is very south of Normandy and very half mountainous country, very rocky, very beautiful countryside, different sort of fighting. Suddenly we're out in the open, very much out in the open, and then again back into woods all of a sudden, you know, a far different terrain to the bocage within North Normandy. So marching down, overnight we marched, and we came across this bridge, rejoined this 53rd Div, and incidents remembers, because we had allotted times to get across the bridge. The bridge had been taken, the ridge across the River Orme, and allotted times. Now, for the South Wales Borderers and the Gloucesters, the march side by side across a bridge was unheard of before. And the two battalions, a lot of leg pulling. They were the only Welsh battalion that landed on D-Day. I don't know if you knew that, the South Wales Borderers. So that was going on, but they were in our brigade with us. The Essex were off attacking elsewhere.
Right, so when you say you marched across the bridge, was there any resistance at the bridge?
Yes, yeah, under shell fire,
right.
At
tell
night.
Me what you were
at
doing.
Night.
Tell me.
Just marching.
Right, so you just you
just marching, ignoring the shell. Yeah. They had been taken by other units, the South Lanks, I think, of the who were a permanent in the 53rd. We marched across the bridge and down to this place, Thurio Cor. By then it was daylight, and we looked down into the town. We were high up, looking down into this town. What a fair-sized town, a small town, beautiful little place. And not a thing was moving. Nothing there was, not a soul. The French civilians would have dived into the take cover, and they see what was coming. Not a soul, not a soul. And so then they decided to send this 10-man patrol down. We moved down, the sergeant and 10 men, we moved down this road, down into the town. Our orders were to get to the bridge, then there was a railway station there at those days, it's no longer there. A railway bridge, where the road went over the railway bridge, or the, I don't know, but it went over the river, and we were told to go over the river bridge. Because the Orme snakes round and we've gone over another bridge, you see. So we laid on our oars to lay on this bridge and watch for 10 minutes, quarter and a half hour. I mean, time we weren't conscious of. And the sergeant suddenly said, right, lads, there's nothing here, let's move back. And we all got up with relief we hadn't gone fighting. As we turned to come back, we hadn't gone 10 yards, and we come under intense machine gun fire from the road we'd just come down. He'd laid in waiting for us. This really was the closest I'd ever been to German soldiers. And we fought hand to hand all the way up to within about...
Hand to hand, I mean, you literally...
As close as I am to you now.
Right.
Though they were in the, laying in the hedges, they'd been concealed. But we could see the machine gun fire was firing and all this sort of thing. We'd fire back at them. We were running, hitting the road, rolling over, doing all the training stuff we'd done before. But he was in cover. And some of them stood up and were firing at us. And it's those I remember seeing going over, so I know I hit them and with my Sten gun. And I fired three mags. I forget how many rounds a magazine holds of a Sten gun, but I know I fired three, more I'd ever fired than any before in my life. The others were firing. We had a Bren gun. He was firing from the hip. Rifles were on the go all the time. A lot of shouting, a lot of noise, a lot of grunting, all sorts of things, screaming. We get up the hill, and as we come running up the hill, the battalion, the company had seen what was happening, and they come belting down the hill, and the Germans retreated. The amazing thing to me this day is the 10 and the sergeant got back without a scratch. We knocked over 20, 30 of them, killed and wounded. I sat and thought about it since. It could only be he wanted to take us prisoner. And we weren't that lucky. You know, and I'm a Christian, unless the good Lord didn't want us that day. I mean, you know, I don't know. And as I said, the attack, let's do the attack before going back to Thuria Corps later, you know. But the next day, in went the attack. By then, we knew he was there. A and B Company went down, and they never got no further than the bridge where we had laid the day before. Pinned down, couldn't move. They then sent D Company down the escarpment, which is quite a cliff, to go down there. Three of us, I found myself very stupidly that day, for me, the first soldier to go down that cliff, and literally sliding down on our backsides. We got down there, and the next three, he had spotted us coming by then, I suppose, the next three were killed, machine gun fire. She blazed away at that cliff. I call it a cliff, but it is pretty steep. And the three of us then got into the ditch. I'm lucky we had the Bren with us. And we put the Bren up on the road and knew where the machine gun was so far, the Spandau was firing at us, and every so often reached up, we can see you, you know. And he fired back about at us. And believe it or not, we got a pack of cards out and we started playing cards. Playing brag or something. Yeah. Now, no, diverse again, my officer Norbrook, back in the hospital, another officer got wounded at Thurie. He come back and he said, do you hear what happened to your lads? And he told him the story. And Norbrook said, I bet you one of them was Rosie, playing cards. Mm-hmm. To finish that story up there, one burst of machine gun fire from the Germans' machine gun hit this cliff behind us, and the chalk flint came across it. It caught Bert Figg was with me, my friend. I was there, and the other chap, he was a ginger-headed pal. I could describe him better than remember his name. It was Appleton, Appleford, Apple something. Might not have been Appleford. A bit of this flint just nicked him. No more than I would cut myself shaving with a razor. Not a severe cut, just a nick. And they're always painful if you cut yourself with a razor. And he suddenly said, I've had enough of this, and his language was choice. And he grabbed that Bren gun, ran across that road, and wiped that machine gun out. He come back and he said, why didn't you stop me doing that? We said, you were gone before we could. We tried to grab him. And he's been with us D-Day. And he wiped that machine gun out. Well, where's we been told to stay down there and they get us out when it got dark? We suddenly took it out. And we got up that cliff pretty too sweet. They pulled the other companies out and we lost 45 casualties that day, including George Frayne, our sergeant, Georgie Frayne, Scottish chap, and been with us from the day I joined the battalion. He got the MM there. So we did quite well again. We had a lot of medals, I tell you. And we pulled back, and by golly, did we get shelled. Because the Essex were attacking elsewhere, our artillery support moved off to support them, and all we had left was our tanks. And they were opening fire, and their barrels got red hot, and they had fired so much. But we would have been in pretty poor state without them, the tanks.
Right. So you were... You've been pinned down to others, so you were you sort of treated as a bit of a hero or a bit of a fool?
Oh, no, they're just commonplace events right. by then. Yeah. I mean, that's the awful part about it. Sometimes it became a bit commonplace. You know, I mean, instead of sitting there, I mean, we knew if we put our head above that road edge, you know, because bullets have a happy, unhappy habit of hitting. That was a tarmac road, and so you knew that, and they go all over the show. And his idea of hitting the cliff was to make it uncomfortable for us.
Yeah.
But we just reached up and, you know, put that ring over, put another mag up. And so, I mean, you learnt a lot. You just didn't put your hands up. I mean, if he did attack us, you'd hear him.
Yes.
You'd hear his feet, just like I did there. You'd hear his feet coming. And you immediately would fire back at him then. It was terrifying, yeah, but you calmed yourself by playing cards. Do you want to hear the rest of the attack?
Yes.
We went in the next day.
I don't want to hear your personal stuff.
Okay. The attack went in the next day, and 17 Platoon D Company were given the lead job again. We moved down into the road. We moved across the road. I remember the glass from the railway station crunching under. Jerry had pulled out. We had no fighting to do. We took Thurio Corps, but he set the place alight, a nasty devil.
Really?
He burnt down a lovely chateau. It's just a ruin there now. He set light to it, burnt the chateau right down. So we moved into there. We moved along the railway line, 17 Platoon, moved along the railway line. A shell burst came from nowhere. We suspect it was our own stuff. And took two of our blokes out. Wounded, I'm pleased to say, they weren't killed.
Yeah.
And you never hear that first shell.
No.
It's faster than that. Wham!
Yes.
And that's on you before you go.
Yeah.
So move on from Thurrie, if you like me to. And we moved across from Thurrie, as personal again, if you like.
Yeah.
I know I go off onto the other. I don't like talking about myself. But we did move off. And by then, we'd broken him. And if you break somebody... In that situation, you keep stupid drop of this.
Yeah.
You keep after them.
Yeah, you keep pushing because you're actually.
So we moved. We moved off out of Thurrie, and we had a ride in some trucks because we were taken into 49th Div. And 49th Div, the Polar Bears, which is where we stayed for the rest of the war.
Right.
We became a permanent fixture to the 49th Div. That was on the 12th of August. About that time, anyway, about a bit later. Might have been a bit later because we were in Thurrie, messing about in Thurrie, the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th, but just after that. So, as I said, once you got him on the run, and we moved up to the north of Normandy a bit, more up to the north they were, and we're in down in the south. What was happening was the Falaise pocket, which you know, the German army, 7th Army, was trapped in this pocket. So, the idea was to keep chasing him. I don't think I've ever been so tired in all my life.
We covered a lot of ground.
We covered. I mean, when I go back and I think we walked all this, we actually walked it, you know. And I'm in a car now; it's taking me hours to do it, you know. But we pushed on, fighting all the time, skirmishes. He left suicide squads. We called them suicide squads, but they were there to hold us up so the main army could get away. And we were fighting all the time. Funny enough, we didn't take many casualties. So we came upon, took a few, but not. A lot of
they
casualties.
Weren't, certainly weren't his crack troops that he left behind.
No. But sadly he did stiffen it up. And it's when, on the 25th of August, a date embedded in my mind, we got on there on the 25th of August to a place called Epaines. Do you want to know how to spell that?
Right, no, I don't.
No.
Right.
For many years I called it Epagne, because that's how it looked.
Right.
When I found out it was called Epaines.
Right, so we'll stop there at the end of this reel.
Yeah.
That's Frank Rosier, end of reel 5.
Mm-hmm.